All right, good afternoon, everybody. If no one from Boston told you yet, welcome to Boston. I hope you enjoy a city I really love. So I've been tasked with telling you how to predict the future, which is almost impossible, but I have no financial disclosures, and I thought we'd divide my talk into predicting sepsis and predicting outcome of sepsis into four sections. Let's first talk about who will survive the first hospitalization. There's a little bit of limited data on the long-term outcome of sepsis that I'll talk about it. And I'm assuming, since most of us are surgeons here, I'll talk about how can we predict sepsis in the emergency general surgery patient, but also the outcome of sepsis in these patients who require source control. And again, we'll talk about some exciting ways to predict this based on the artificial intelligence. So let's start with in-hospital mortality and morbidity of septic patient. So let's make it simple. Sepsis is bad. It has a very high mortality rate. So if you want to go with one message, take that simple message. It's really bad, and because of the new definition, I think in the next few years we're going to see that the mortality of sepsis, it's going up, and I don't think it's really going up. It's just we changed the definition to be a little bit more severe. But if you look, if you review the literature in the last 30 years, you will find data that suggests that sepsis has a mortality somewhere between 10% and 52%. I'm not going to go into all the data on that, but I'll show you some landmark studies on the topic. This is in the United States, looking at the epidemiology of sepsis from the year 1979 to the year 2000, and it had more than 10 million patients. And if you look at the y-axis, this is the proportion of patients with sepsis who died, and on the x-axis is the years 1979 to 2001, and you can immediately see that even though the rate has been decreasing, it's been as high as 31%, and as low as 21%, so somewhere between 20 and 30% based on the administrative data from all over the United States. If you look at this study also from the United States, a little bit more recent, from 1993 to 2003, I'm not sure you can see very well in the back, but the first graph is hospitalizations. So basically, from the year 1993 to 2003, we've been seeing an increase in the rate of, or the number of hospitalizations all over the US of patients labeled as septic. The second graph is the overall mortality per 100,000 people, and the y-axis in both graphs is in per 100,000 people. And you can see that the mortality, meaning the number of people dying from sepsis per 100,000 people, has been increasing. But don't let that fool you, because if you actually divide the two, you'll find that the case fatality, the mortality rate per patient, the risk of mortality per patient, is the third graph that's showing you that we've been making some progress and the rate has been decreasing from as high as 45% to as low as 30%. This is another landmark study. It's now, I don't know if they can go back and change the title, but it's SIRS criteria in defining severe sepsis, both of which are out, no more sepsis and no more severe sepsis, no more SIRS. But the study is actually a really good one in the New England Journal of Medicine, and this is an unadjusted mortality rate. And if you just look at the black line, you can see from 1999 till 2013, the rate of mortality, or the risk of mortality, has been decreasing steadily from about 37% to about 20%. It seems in most reliable studies, in most level one studies, or either randomized trials, or more importantly, big population-based studies, the lowest we've been able to reach 20%. And I wouldn't, even though I put the range between 10 and 52%, I think the actual range is somewhere between 20 and 35%. So this is another one, but this is from outside the US for our international colleagues. This is from England, Wales, and Northern Ireland, and this is a reverse. This is a Kaplan-Meier, so you're looking at survival, and it shows about the same thing. That's the rate of mortality is somewhere between, it's about 47%, 30 to 47%. So fact number two that I want you to take home with you is that mortality is proportional to the severity of sepsis. And that does not depend on sepsis 1, sepsis 2, sepsis 3. No matter how we defined it, the concept is the same. The more severe the sepsis, no matter how you measure it, the worse it is. This is from the same study that I mentioned before from Dr. Kokkonen, and you can see that on the first graph, on the unadjusted mortality, you can see that patients who met one SIRS criteria had a mortality of about 15%. When they meet the second SIRS criteria, It about 20% goes up to 25, and then to 30% when you have four-SIRS criteria. And the same thing when you do adjusted odds of mortality, that number of SIRS criteria they met correlated exactly with the risk of mortality. The same thing, this is another study from Dr. Rangel Fausto, and you can see moving, if you look at the left side part of your graph, you can see sepsis mortality was 16%. When it was severe sepsis, based on the old definition, became 20%. When you were in septic shock, it became 46%. However, we know now, as Dr. Ho already explained, the definitions have changed. I think the disease is still the same, and I think we all know a septic patient when we see them to a certain extent, and this helps us at population-based level. But there's no more SIRS, no more severe sepsis, and we changed the definitions, so these two are out. And the sepsis 3 definition, as we talked about, is life-threatening organ dysfunction that's caused by kind of a maladaptive behavior of the host to the degree of infection happening. So the infection plus a SOFA score more than 2 or equal to 2, which is what defines sepsis at present. And we will go a little bit more into SOFAs, but this is a little bit of a cartoon that helps you remember it, and I'm happy to share it with anybody who emails me, but it's also on YouTube from the Surviving Sepsis Guidelines. It's a decrease in PaO2 over FiO2, hypotension needing vasopressors, decrease in platelets, decrease in GCS, increase in bilirubin, and increase in creatinine or decrease in oliguria for patients who are in the advanced SOFAS criteria. If you have sepsis, it's at least a 10% mortality. And don't take that lightly. The mortality of myocardial infarction, the heart attack that everybody talks about, is estimated to be 8%. This is very high. Now, this is the SOFAS score, not going to go into it, but it's basically a score from 0 to 1, 2, 3, 4. And you can see the PaO2 over FiO2 ratio, platelets, bilirubin, and hypotension, GCS, and creatinine on oliguria. And that's how you calculate the SOFAS score. The reason I put these, because when you have sepsis with hypotension that's needed in vasopressor and a serum lactate of more than 18, which translates in the United States units that we used to about 2, in the absence of hypovolemia, that correlates with more than 40% mortality, and that's what we used to define typically as the septic shock. The quick SOFA score is also something that correlates with how patients do, and this is what the quick SOFA score is: an altered mental status, GCS less than 15, or something tachypneic, respiratory rate more than 22, hypotension, systolic blood pressure less than 100. If you have 2 or 3 more points, you actually do worse. So what do the studies tell us? There isn't as much studies because this is a very new definition, but some early studies tell us that a SOFA score of 2 or more was present in 98% of patients who died from sepsis. The SOFA score was more than 2 only in 10% of patients who survived. We know that the QSOFA is better than the old SIRS criteria, and that's why it replaced it, but it's not as good as the more comprehensive SOFA score. The SOFA score, and I'll come back to that, had an area in the studies, an area under the curve of the 0.74. And I know not everybody is a statistician here, but 0.74 is how much of the outcome is explained by the SOFA score, and it's a moderate. It's not an excellent, it's a good one. Anything above 0.7 is pretty good. 0.74 is a moderate in terms of prediction. So not perfect, but it does a good job. If you have hypotension, vasopressor requirements, serum lactate more than 2, that's what I mentioned in a study that was done at UPMC and Kaiser Permanente, the mortality was somewhere between 35 and 54%. Fact number 3 to take, that sepsis increases the risk of other hospital-acquired infections, especially in ICU patients. And when you look at the study, what infections are we talking about? The highest one is catheter-related bloodstream infections, then hospital-acquired pneumonias, then you talk about abdominal infections. These are the highest risk. Do we know how these patients do long-term? They actually continue to have poor outcome. There isn't many studies, but we know they have at least a 20% increased risk of death in long-term, and most deaths occur within the first 6 months. After that, it starts to decrease, the risk decrease, but it plateaus later on at some point, which we don't know yet. It could be 1 year, 2 years, who knows. The risk of death we know is still elevated at 2 years. I don't think there's any study longer than that. And we know that patients, when you look at the quality of life, they all have a decreased quality of life at least at 1 year down the road. So the outcomes of sepsis continue long-term after it. Now let's switch gears a little bit to talk about the emergency general surgery patient. Is there a better marker of predicting sepsis, one, but also predicting how patients do? This is the emergency surgery score, or ESS, which is, we like to think of it as the equivalent of ISS in trauma, the injury severity scale. And it's a score that's based, it's a point system based on some demographic variables like age more than 60, comorbidities like having a history of COPD or steroid use, lab values, for example, if you have creatinine, that's high, you get 2 points for that. And based on that, you can get a score of as high as 29, theoretically, but most patients will be as high as 22 at the most. And we know that that correlates with mortality. A lot of these patients are septic, correlates pretty good with mortality. You can see at a score of 1, you have a 0.1 mortality risk. At a score of 12, it's about 33.8 mortality risk. And once with ESS, you reach a score of 22, it's 100% mortality risk. When you look at how does the ESS predict sepsis in the patients that you're seeing, you're going to operate on them preoperatively, it does correlate very well until you reach about score of 13, where those patients are extremely ill, then it's not as predictive, because at that point, the risk of sepsis is so high that it kind of plateaus at about a score of 15. But does it perform better than our SOFA score? It's actually performs almost the same. It says in the area under the curve is 0.75, so not much better, but it's specific to the emergency general surgery patients if you want to use it. It's not, so I think SOFAS is fine, ESS is fine, and the question, do we have something better? And I don't know about you, but Google is able to tell me that by looking what time I leave home at 6 a.m. every day or 5:30 a.m. and what time I come back home, it can tell which is my work location and which is my home location without me explicitly telling it that. So that's what artificial intelligence is. And I think the same concept we've used in working both here in Boston, not too far from you, from it at Mass General Hospital, as well as the MIT, which are our engineering colleagues, we've been trying to predict things a little better. And I encourage you at the end of the session to look into the Potter calculator. You can download it for free on your iPhones or Androids if you look for Potter calculator. And it does help us do that. And I'll explain you what it is. So it uses artificial intelligence, just like these algorithms in Google, to trying to see how patients would do without needing all the information. Essentially what it is, it's continually learning from its mistakes, even when it's not programmed to do so. It's adaptive, it's interactive, reboots itself with each variable, accounts for nonlinear interactions among all the variables, so not everything matters, it depends on the patient. For example, you want to predict the septic shock in this patient, first question would be BUN. You plug BUN of 6, it asks you if the patient is mechanically ventilated. If you put yes, it wants to know the AST. You put AST, it gives you what surgery will be performed. If you change any of the answers, you can see on the left-hand side, I changed the answer, the patient is not on mechanical ventilation. Now it's asking about COPD, it's asking me about the wound classification of the possible surgery. So very interaction, every answer to any question changes the algorithm completely. And eventually, it comes down to give you a mortality risk a septic shock risk of 14.88%, based on the fact that 108 patients out of 726 patients had septic shock that looked exactly like your patient. So how we did, we had about 400,000 patients. We had 4 questions to 10 questions to answer. Here's the key. For mortality, it predicted it at an area under the curve of 0.92. So much higher than anything we have. So you can compare it to the ASA, ESS, and the American College of Surgeons Surgical Risk Calculator, much higher. When you do complications, it does the same. How does it perform for sepsis and septic shock? For sepsis, it predicts with an area under the curve that's 0.84. For septic shock, it's 0.93. Extremely high, much more accurate, and that's why, so it's 0.93, that's why I think it's very promising. I don't think it's completely ready, and we would rely on a lot of the feedback we get from everybody to make it better. So coming to my last slide, to summarize, there's 5 take-home points I want you to take with you. Sepsis is bad, has an extremely high mortality. It's at least 20%, and it could be as high as 52%. The severity of sepsis, no matter how you define it, correlates with mortality. SOFA is very predictive of mortality. QSOFA is a little bit less predictive of mortality. For the emergency surgery patient, ESS is a good predictive of postoperative sepsis, and there's some exciting new ways like the Potter calculator, which is so far the best predictor in these specific patients. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today, and I'll be happy to take any questions on the panel.